The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
On December 14th, the internet and everything you do on it is very likely to change. The commissioners of the FCC are going to vote on regulations about net neutrality. And if you think this doesn't concern you, you might want to listen. Net neutrality means that your internet provider can't change your data speed to favor certain websites or charge you different rates for different content. And this has been a principle since the founding of the internet. But now, over the objections of websites great and small, including Google, Facebook, Amazon, Etsy, and Kickstarter, the FCC may be set to do away with its regulations on net neutrality entirely. Here to walk me through what that would all look like is Nicholas Thompson, formerly my close colleague as editor of NewYorker.com, and now he's the editor-in-chief of Wired magazine. We've known each other for quite a while, and let me just say that net neutrality is your subject, not mine. And I want to know, why is it such an important issue for anyone who uses the web?
So net neutrality is the principle that all the information that flows over the pipes that make up the internet are treated the same. So when you go to a browser and you type in something, information flows over fiber optic cables and it flows up your computer and you can see it. And one of the great things about the internet is that for the most part, since it's existed, the people who control the pipes have had to treat all the information the same. So no matter what video service you want to use or what type of political news you want to read or whether you want to go to a startup that's competing with the people that own the pipes, you can read that information. So when net neutrality is gone, which is something that Ajit Pai, the head of the current FCC, has proposed, you'll no longer have that guarantee. So it's possible that, say, Verizon or Comcast or Time Warner Cable could say, you know what? We don't like that video service. We're going to make it hard for that information to get over the pipes to you. Or, you know what? We don't like the political views on that website. We're going to make it hard. You know what? We don't think people should read The New Yorker because The New Yorker has been critical of us. So we're going to cut off The New Yorker.
Now I'm interested.
Yeah.
Why is this in anyone's interest to get rid of net neutrality?
Well, it's in Verizon, Comcast, and everybody else's
interest.
So
what do they get out of it?
Well, they can charge. They can say, you know what? We're going to cut The New Yorker off from its readers unless you pay us, unless you become part of some package deal. Now, it wouldn't happen with The New Yorker. But let's say I'm Comcast and I want to start a video service and I really want people to use that instead of Netflix. Well, then I can just slow down Netflix or I can cut off Netflix.
Or you give it preferential.
Preferential treatment. Then people have to use my service. And the reason this is a problem is because we've screwed up this other part of government regulation. Right? Who do you get your internet access from? You probably get it from Verizon or Comcast. There aren't many options. In most cities in America, you have one option, two options. And we screwed this up because we allowed so many mergers, we weren't able to foster competition. So there is no competition in broadband access. So you need to regulate the people who control the pipes because consumers don't have any choice.
Is there any relationship between this initiative and the Trump administration's decision to stand in the way of the AT&T Time Warner merger?
Well, the funny thing is that—
because they seem to contradict each other.
They do contradict each other. So we don't know why Trump is standing in the way of that merger.
We think it's because he doesn't like CNN very much.
I know. So from my perspective, it's kind of amazing. Because he's mad at CNN, he's actually doing something in the public interest, right? So if you're concerned about there being a competitive internet, you would want there to be lots of ISPs, lots of companies that provide the pipes so consumers could choose. We don't have that. Too many mergers, too much conglomeration, not very good regulation. So you do want things like blocking mergers and blocking these companies from getting ever, ever larger. We're heading back kind of to where we were with Ma Bell, back when we just had AT&T.
In a kind of monolithic world.
Yeah, we're heading back towards a monolithic world of the people who provide your internet access. So I want one of two things. I either want net neutrality, a rule that says the small number of companies you have, those monopoly providers, they have to treat everything fairly. Or I want competitive broadband. But we're heading to a world where we don't have either.
So essentially, this creates a kind of two-tiered internet, one for the rich and one for everybody else.
Well, we don't know what we'll create, right? We don't know exactly how, when net neutrality is gone, what the ISPs, the companies who control the pipes, what they'll do. We don't know whether they'll cut off access. We don't know whether they'll favor their own services. We don't know whether they'll end up deciding that certain kinds of political arguments are okay and they'll let that through and certain kinds are not. So they say, hey, just relax.
Yeah, they claim they won't be bad actors, right?
We won't be bad actors. We agree in net neutrality. It's in our interest. But just take away this heavy-handed regulation.
But history proves
history
otherwise.
Suggests otherwise.
Yeah.
When they're not in those moments where there isn't strict regulation, we've gone back and forth with sort of different kinds of net neutrality regulations since more or less since the 1970s. And when there have been moments where there have been openings, the telecom providers have been happy to take those openings. So what Ajit Pai has proposed is to get rid of the strict net neutrality rules and to say, okay, well, the companies will have to disclose what they're doing and then to push some authority onto the FTC, which does have the ability to react if a telecom company does something bad.
But what's Ajit Pai's ideological impulse here?
Well, the strongest justification I can give for what Ajit Pai is doing would be A, we believe in free markets. We should just let the markets do what they want to do. Let's get the FCC out of this business. And if you're a free market ideologue, that makes sense. The second thing is, hey, take your foot off the broadband providers. Give them a little more freedom. If you give them more freedom, they'll invest more. Comcast will build faster pipes. Internet in the United States is really quite bad compared to other developed countries. So maybe if Verizon and Comcast had more freedom and can do whatever they'd want,
they'd improve service and not raise prices.
Yeah, or they'd make—
History doesn't show that happens all that often.
These are the least liked companies in America, according to most consumer surveys, because they don't have a great history of taking their extra profits and making things better for you.
So Silicon Valley's hardly ever embraced governmental oversight. So why aren't they cheering this proposal?
Well, Silicon Valley doesn't want this. Silicon Valley definitely wants there to be net neutrality. And they want there to be net neutrality because they don't like the idea that, wait, so we're going to have to pay Comcast to have people come and read our site? But what's interesting is they're a little more conflicted now that they're big than they were than they were small.
They're not so idealistic.
Well, it's not, yes, they're not so idealistic, but their interests have changed, right? So when Google was a small company, it really wants there to be a level playing field. Now that Google is a big company, I don't know, maybe a system where the rich have a huge structural advantage could be good.
So what impact does this all have on, forgive me, democracy?
Well, it could have no impact, right? If Ajit Pai is right and all it leads to is more investment by the telecom companies, in fact, it could be good, right? If more people had more access to more information and the internet worked better, democracy might function better. Most likely, it will lead to fewer people having access to information and democracy working a little bit less well, right? You'd like to think that the way the internet should work, it should be a great equalizer. It should get information out to people. It should help them register to vote. It should help them be educated about issues. And that doesn't always happen, as we saw in the last election, and in fact, maybe going in the wrong direction. But in general, more internet access should make democracy work better. And so if net neutrality leads to less good internet access with more restrictions, more meddling by the telcos, that would be bad.
What's the recourse the public has except at the ballot box?
The only recourse, the recourse the public has is to flood the FCC with comments, which was kind of interesting because they did flood the FCC with comments, but there are also all these bots that flooded the FCC with
Fake comments.
So suddenly, the most commented upon issue in American civic life, it turns out there are tons of bots interfering with it. So as a side note, That would be a pretty good reason to delay the vote that's now scheduled for December 14th to figure out what was going on. If we're going to have comments and actual democratic discussion of this thing that's really important for democracy and it was flooded by bots, maybe you should slow down and figure out what the bots were. It's an argument that Democratic senators are making right now, but unlikely to be a persuasive argument.
A writer for Gizmodo said that nothing short of an extinction-level event will prevent the repeal of net neutrality rules. Are they right?
No. I mean,
are there things people can do to preserve the rules?
Yeah, there are a whole bunch of things people can do to preserve the rules. So the first thing you can do to preserve the rules is people can call their congressman before December 14th and Congress could pressure the FCC, or you can...
Will there be lawsuits?
Yes, that is the fundamental way. There are going to be lawsuits. And there are a lot of legal scholars who feel that what Ajit Pai has done is so radical that the courts will look askance at it. And so almost certainly the day after this passes on December 14th, we'll pass on a party line vote, 3-2. There will be lawsuits filed and it will take a while.
Where would you put the odds of congressional legislation to codify net neutrality, get it locked into place? Do most members of Congress even understand the web? Are they interested in this subject?
I don't think many are interested in it. As we see anytime there are hearings about technology, there are a lot who don't really understand what the internet is or how it works. I think that what's going to happen is it will be tied up in court, and if the Republicans control the House and the Senate in the next election, we'll get rid of net neutrality. If the Democrats flip it, they'll swing it back. I mean, net neutrality has shifted a whole bunch. We had kind of weak net neutrality laws under Obama that were then in danger in the courts. And then in 2015, Tom Wheeler, Obama's FCC chairman, surprised everybody by putting in place this really strong regime. And now Ajit Pai is flipping it all the way back. If political power shifts, you could see it change again.
Is there some sort of structural original sin of the internet which led us to where we are today?
Yeah, there are a lot of original sins of the internet that have complicated effects. So the internet was set up very much to be decentralized, to allow anonymity, and to allow people to do what they wanted. And so that's a good thing in a lot of ways. It's what gave the internet that Wild West feeling, freedom. On the other hand, it's what has made it so easy for people to harass other people or to attack other people. You've seen a real shift in the way the people who control the internet think about the internet. You've seen a shift from, this is a place where we want to encourage free speech. This is a place where we want to encourage the ability for people to go anonymous and do what they want, to, this is a place where we need to be really careful how people treat each other. Maybe we need to put in some more rules and restrictions. So in some ways, the fundamental sin of the internet is what we're trying to defend here. And so ideally what you could have is an internet where there is openness, where there is freedom, where you can have opportunity, but also where people treat each other well. And so the hope would be that net neutrality would kind of deal with the first part.
That was Nick Thompson, the editor-in-chief of Wired Magazine.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.